Many materials were destined for Iraq, such as hundreds of tanks, nearly 34 grams of plutonium, 1,000 kilograms of uranium, SAM-7 missiles, 500 Kalashnikov submachine guns, etc. No details were given as to the foreigners figuring among the 30 persons indicted. Henry Arsan, the Syrian businessman considered the brains of the traffic, died last year in prison in Milan. Repeating that last sentence, Henry Arsan, the Syrian businessman considered the brains of the traffic, died last year in prison in Milan. And I would interrupt again to say, add Arsan to the long and growing list of prison casualties which result when the investigations of these various P2-related scams begin. Continuing, the four other Italians mentioned were Glauco Partel, Carlo Bertoncini, Vincenzo Giovanelli, and Ivan Galileos. Certainly, Carlo Palermo, basically concludes that section. So before we continue, three atomic bombs were going to be shipped to unnamed Middle Eastern countries. Possibility of Syria will be discussed later on. But it's worth noting here that as we get into the American intelligence connections, that the leader of this ring, Henry Arsan, after his arrest, dies in prison conveniently before any of the cases that he's connected with can come up in court.
Continuing with the Le Matin article a little further down. In any case, the five principal indictees, in other words, the folks indicted, are stars of the arms traffic milieu. The most famous is Glauco Partel. This Roman engineer, specializing in the fabrication of missiles, directs the Center for Research on Missile Propulsion in Rome, a private institute. When Palermo, Judge Palermo, interrogated him, Partel admitted that for the last 15 years, he worked for the National Security Agency. That's the U.S. National Security Agency, which employs 200,000 agents. And if it is less talked about than the CIA, it is no less effective. Partel, moreover, isn't lacking for sponsors. In 1981, during the Falklands War, he participated in a formidable operation on behalf of British intelligence for the befuddlement of the Argentine services. In Paris, he proposed to the captain of the vessel Alfredo Corti, chief of the naval air mission of the Argentine ambassador, the sale of 24 Exocet missiles. The Argentine jumped at the chance. The Exocets were never delivered. They never existed. The captain was repatriated on the double. Should just mention here, it's interesting that what this story actually is, we're not quite sure at this point. But here on one end of this thing, we've got Licio Gelli and Massimo Pugliese. Massimo Pugliese already connected to Stibon, trying to put together a sale of Exocet missiles. On the other hand, in this article, they're suggesting that Glauco Partel was working on behalf of Britain to pretend there would be a sale of Exocet missiles, which in fact there wouldn't be. So a story that needs to be a little further investigated.
Well, one possibility is that the U.S. and Britain were cooperating in the Falklands War, a fact which drew a lot of anger from the Argentines.
Yes, indeed.
And remember, Partel is working by his own admission for the National Security Agency for 15 years.
Continuing. So the intermediary in the A-bomb affair had a charged past. But so did the seller himself. Eugene Bartholomaeus was installed in the Australian city of Sydney and had already done business with Partel, selling him tanks and helicopters. He told his client that it all came from CIA surplus arms stores. In 1980, Bartholomaeus was mixed up in the Nugan Hand Bank scandal. Get back to that in a second. Eugene Bartholomaeus and his companion Edwin Wilson, since convicted in the United States, were implicated in the illicit sale of arms to Libya. He was also tied to mafia families in Los Angeles, and he maintained excellent relations with an Australian of Chinese origin, Dennis Wong, suspected of being a crime syndicate director in Sydney. But this time, it seemed, Eugene Bartholomaeus hit the jackpot. It was more than a question of ultra-modern tanks, helicopters, or frigates. What he proposed was nothing less than the sale of three nuclear devices. The telexes don't indicate where they were to be assembled. We don't know if the Americans mounted this operation to intimidate Israel and South Africa, excluded as buyers of the bombs. Partel, after all, was a specialist in deception, as shown by his role with the Exocets. In any case, the Roman engineer, that's Glauco Partel still, explained that he contacted representatives of the Syrian government who were very interested in the purchase. The negotiations began shortly thereafter. A telex seized by Judge Palermo from Partel's office reads, quote, arrived, negotiator seller in Amsterdam Wednesday, 27th of January. After contact, will follow to Luxembourg. Okay, bunch of important things to look at here in this article. Okay, we're talking about Glauco Partel now, who by his own admission says that he is working for the NSA, the National Security Agency, the top secret United States intelligence agency that works almost exclusively with intelligence gleaned from electronic sources and other sources of that sort. A huge organization, very secretive. Glauco Partel also apparently involved somehow in the Exocet missile deal going on or not going on in the Argentine Falklands War. Now, the Falklands War come in a variety of ways into this whole operation, not only because of the fact of the strong connections between the P2 and the Italian P2 and the Argentine P2, but also, as we will talk about next week, because of the involvement of certain other people at that time, and the involvement of people like Michael Ledeen involved in the Pope shooting with Alexander Haig, some speculation that we have there, things of that nature. A bunch of things to look at in terms of the Falklands.
Broadcasting from Foothill College, this is KFJC Los Altos Hills.
Partel's involvement there, something to be checked into. Now, involved with Partel in the sale of the A-bombs, for which Pugliese and Rosanna Brazzi and the others are indicted, Eugene Bartholomaeus. Bartholomaeus, with a very interesting background, involved in the Nugenhand Bank scandal. Now, the Nugenhand Bank, for those of you who have not been following these broadcasts long enough to remember, the Nugenhand Bank was an intelligence bank, okay, that was put together out of the...
It was put together, actually, it was a joint CIA and naval intelligence operation. The naval intelligence group involved here was called Task Force 157. And a couple of key names to remember in connection with Task Force 157, Henry Kissinger and the aforementioned Edwin Wilson. We'll be going into that in our series on organized crime, intelligence, and narcotics. We touched on it briefly in Radio Free America 4 when we were talking about the Turple-Wilson connection.
Anyway, the Nugenhand Bank, a very interesting bank for a variety of reasons. The Nugenhand Bank was primarily an intelligence bank. There were a lot of CIA operations being run through the bank, with the bank as a cover for laundering of money in the drug traffic and the weapons traffic, and also for direct CIA political operations. When one of the bank's founders was found dead in the Australian outback, government agents descended on the bank, forced the employees to stay in there all night long, shredding documents, and told any of them that if they said a word about what had happened, that their families would be killed. These are U.S. military and intelligence officers telling this to bank employees, according to several different accounts. Anyway, the Nugenhand Bank, as Dave mentioned, linked to Task Force 157, Henry Kissinger, and Ed Wilson. Ed Wilson, of course, also involved very heavily with Muammar Gaddafi, with Frank Turple and Gary George Corkula, who we're going to talk about in a little while. We have Bartholomaeus now tied into the whole thing. So we have a whole separate little side loop going with Libya. We've got Libya involved with the Italian fascists. We've got Libya involved with people like Otto Skorzeny, ex-Nazis. We've got Muammar Gaddafi involved in supporting the International Fascista, which is operating all over Latin America. We've got Libya also involved in the arms trade in terms of offloading Soviet-made weapons like the Kalashnikovs and others, and getting those into the Stibom circuit. And now we also have them involved through people like Eugene Bartholomaeus and Ed Wilson, involved with Stibom and this particular sale of, or would-be sale of, atomic weapons to Syria. So there's a whole little side thing going with Muammar al-Qaddafi, who, as we mentioned earlier, is the quote-unquote idol of the Avanguardia Nazionale people, who are linked to Licio Gelli and the P2, and who claim that Hitler, Mao, and Muammar Gaddafi are their shining stars. So Gaddafi apparently involved in this whole thing, and as we'll see in the Pope shooting in general, up to his neck. And as mentioned before, Frank Turple, who claimed to have trained Mehmet Ali Agha how to use a gun at the time he was doing that, was also working for, definitely working for Muammar Muammar al-Qaddafi, and almost as definitely working at the same time for the American CIA.
We'll be talking about Turple and some of the connecting links between him and this whole plot again next week. But perhaps for our purposes here, the most important things to remember is the American connection. The Los Angeles-based branch SUTAS, the connections to Reagan, Nixon, Frank Sinatra, Dean Rusk, the Glauco Partel, of course, being one of the key, well, Henry Arsan himself, who dies in prison, is working for DEA. Glauco Partel is working for the National Security Agency, and as we've seen, one of his key associates in the A-bomb scam was Eugene Bartholomeus, who not only worked for CIA, but specifically was an associate of Edwin Wilson's in the basically the CIA operation in Libya, whereby Gaddafi's terrorists were trained and armed.
We're going to take a short musical break. We'll come right back with Radio Free America number 25, reprising a couple of hours of Radio Free America number 20. We're reprising part of Radio Free America number 20, then we'll go live again for about the last half hour of the show.
Again, remember the American intelligence connections, SUTAS, Arsan, Bartholomeus, and Partel's connections to American intelligence front and center here, because again, one of the other top dogs, and I use the term advisedly, in Stibom was Bakir Chilenk, affiliated with the Grey Wolves and reputedly the paymaster for the plot to shoot the Pope. The next day, the day following the article that Nip just read you, the second part in this Le Matin series appeared about Stibom. This is from Le Matin of June 21st, 1984, and it's headlined, On the Track of the Leopard, by Fabrizio Calvi. By the way, the leopard referred to here is the Leopard tank, a West German heavy tank. Continuing, or beginning with the article. Eugene Bartholomeus escaped the curiosity of the Australian police. His companions in the CIA protected him well, and it is they who put him in contact with the Roman engineer Glauco Partel, the man who took it upon himself to find clients for the devices. I'm going to read that last couple sentences again. Eugene Bartholomeus escaped the curiosity of the Australian police. His companions in the CIA protected him well, and it is they who put him in contact with the Roman engineer Glauco Partel, the man who took it upon himself to find clients for the devices. The Italian, as he explained to Carlo Palermo, who indicted him last year, had just quit his work at SAI, where he was occupied fabricating missiles. He didn't yet know what he was going to do. It was then that he received at his Rome office a telex proposing that he sell a lot of 66 Cobra helicopters, which the Americans couldn't sell in Iran because of the change of regime. The engineer told the judge, quote, "The helicopters were in an airport in Belgium ready for delivery. The finances had to pass through the credit bank of Anvers, but I wasn't able to find buyers, and the helicopters were recently destroyed during NATO maneuvers," unquote. The first setback didn't break the confidence of Bartholomeus or the Americans. Partel continued. One of his accomplices, Carlo Bertoncini, an Italian industrialist from Pomezia, told the judge how, in October of 1982, he negotiated with the Roman engineer to sell 116 tanks and 20 helicopters to the Somalian president, Siad Barre. When he received the two men in his office on 17th of October, 1982, the African chief of state specified that he had asked his services to check with Washington on the credentials of Partel. He explained that he had obtained all the necessary guarantees. Moreover, the sale went through. And Judge Palermo has in his dossier a copy of the contract signed by Glauco Partel and the Somalian Minister of Finances. And when the magistrate asked the engineer where his arms came from, he replied, "The Americans," unquote. Ex-agent of the National Security Agency, reseller of arms from the CIA, the missile expert explained to the Trento judge why the American intelligence services wanted at all cost to sell their surplus. Quote, "The market in arms is divided into two categories, official sales of one government to another on the one hand, and more discreet transactions on the other, which bring in, with government blessing, a series of intermediaries. Beyond its discretion, the second system presents an advantage. It permits the circulation of bribes." I would interrupt. Recall that bribing is blackmail, are one of the major devices that P2 uses to enhance its power. Continuing. "For its private transactions, the American government demands three conditions: evidence of funds, approval of the State Department, and a purchase order on the part of the acquiring government. For private sales, one makes use of separate accounts directed by persons such as Eugene Bartholomeus or one named Jenny Bende, B-E-N-D-E. They have the formal function of reseller and avail themselves of intermediaries, always with the approval of Secret Services, unquote. Reading that last sentence again. They have the formal function of reseller and avail themselves of intermediaries, always with the approval of Secret Services, unquote. Partell was one of these intermediaries. He was able to establish contacts with an impressive number of governments, and the diagram of his organization that he made for Judge Palermo shows that he could intervene throughout the world. Carlo Bertoncini handled relations with Iraq and Iran. Vincenzo Giovanelli with Israeli and Arab contacts. The lawyer Campagna dealt with China. A certain Dutcher, D-U-T-C-H-E-R, was also in touch with China, but also with Saudi Arabia as well. And Marshall adds in parentheses here, this must be John Dutcher, Triple's contact, and quotes the Jack Anderson column of November 13th, 1981. So another probable link here between Stibom Arms for Drugs Ring and the Triple Wilson CIA team. So that is a very, very important connection, the Dutcher connection. Reviewing this section very briefly, what we've looked at so far, Partell has basically said that Stibom was used as a major organ of the American government, not only for unloading its surplus arms, but for basically compromising people who were incorporated as intermediaries in some of these sales. And the massive American involvement here, according to Partell, himself a national security agent, is not surprising in light of the fact that the head of this ring was a DEA agent. Bartholomeus is working for CIA and a major branch originating in L.A.
Continuing with the article. The purchasing central functioned as effectively. Glauco Partell reserved for himself negotiations with the principal furnisher, the American State Department. Reuting, R-E-U-T-I-N-G, and the armorer Kriteros talked with the Federal Republic of Germany. That's West Germany, of course. Bartholomeus occupied himself with Britain and the Commonwealth countries on the one hand, and countries fabricating Soviet arms, like Korea, on the other. Richard Eschbach handled ties with the French. Partell was also in contact with an impressive number of foreign countries, specialized in the importation and export of arms. One of these brings us directly to the Nugenhand Bank of Sydney, the financial facade of the CIA for the international, for the arms traffic. Let me read that sentence again. One of these brings us directly to the Nugenhand Bank of Sydney, financial facade for the CIA for arms traffic. That which interests us is the French affiliate of Commerce International, headquartered in Cannes-sur-Mer, a little town in the Maritime Alps on the Côte d'Azur. Since 1981, this company has officially renounced the sale of arms, none of which prevented in 1982 it receiving from an Indian general an order for thousands of cartridges. The company that directs this officer asked Glauco Partell for a reference. According to the British review Private Eye, during the Falklands War, the head of Commerce International, or Commerce International, Frank Craddock, sold Argentina a lot of munitions similar to those requested by the Indians. Frank Craddock is of British nationality. His unpatriotic gesture was not appreciated on the other side of the channel. Still, according to Private Eye, he fled to Great Britain, where he was sought for bankruptcy fraud. Frank Craddock was tied to the arms trafficker Sarkis Sognalian, installed in Miami, where he directed an arms network for the CIA. Commerce International is a multinational company having affiliates in, among other places, Washington, Brussels, Cannes-sur-Mer, and Singapore. According to Mother Jones magazine, it was an emanation of the CIA. In Australia, journalists for the National Times affirmed that it was implicated not only in arms trafficking, but also in shadow operations directed by Nugenhand, apparently for the CIA, the destabilization of the Whitlam government in 1975. We just cut in to explain. That was the government of Prime Minister Gough Whitlam, a Labour government not sympathetic to some of the things the CIA was involved in, specifically, among others, the use of the Pine Gap station. The Gough Whitlam government was actually destabilized. Again, we're talking much like, just like with Italy, was destabilized effectively, an ally by the United States CIA, because we did not approve of their attitude towards the CIA's operation in their own country. That was something Nugenhand was used for as a conduit for funds. Judge Palermo's researches weren't confined to the Western countries. In following the path of a lot of Leopard tanks, he stuck his nose into the Middle East. Among all the arms sold by Partell and his friends, Palermo also found tanks theoretically reserved to the NATO countries that were offered to Iraq and Iran. It has been years since people in Europe spoke of a traffic of this type in tanks fabricated by the FRG. Again, that's West Germany. There were rumors of a sale to Libya, but there was no proof until Palermo found evidence of even more disquieting transactions. The sale of Leopards had been negotiated by Glauco Partel. Who was the seller? Palermo asked. Quote, it was a man named Reuting, Partel replied. He was officially based in the Federal Republic of Germany and was occupied in import-export. He must be allied with the federal services, meaning with West German federal intelligence. Reuting put himself in contact with us through Eugene Bartholomaeus when the latter was proposing to us to sell the 66 helicopters I told you about, unquote. To whom were the tanks offered? To Renato Gamba, proprietor of a small arms factory in the valley of Trompia in the north of Italy, not far from Trento. It wasn't so much the personality of Gamba that held the most surprises for Judge Palermo as the men with whom he was in contact and for whose account he realized these transactions. Carlo Palermo had just quit the world of CIA vendors of the Eugene Bartholomaeuses to enter the no less troubling universe of Middle Eastern buyers allied to the Syrian services and directed by the astonishing Henry Arsène.
So basically, what we have here is an operation which appears to be primarily revolving around two organizations, one of them, the P2 and the related Banco Ambrosiano connections, the other being Western Intelligence. Not only Arsène, but also Partel, Bartholomaeus, are working for elements of U.S. intelligence and or law enforcement. And according to Glauco Partel, many of the operations of Stibom were undertaken at the instigation of the U.S. government. So we have a massive, massive American intelligence connection to Stibom here, in light of the fact that part of it originates in Los Angeles. That's not all that surprising. And remember now that there are a number of links, the main one being Bekir Çelenk, between this arms for drugs ring and the shooting of Pope John Paul II.
Absolutely.
Also worth remembering, Renato Gamba here, remember, was the person part of whose arms factory was financed by Brugge Izar. Part of Brugge Izar is owned by Ambrosiano.
All right, we're going to take another break at this point, and we will be back in just a few moments. The man who's going to sell you the stuff that you need and the Trans Global Express. And it all adds up together here, folks, because we are talking about the world's largest guns for drugs and terrorism network, Stibom. Originally, we were talking about it only in terms of the context of the Italian politics and the right-wing politics of the Italian P2 Propaganda Due Masonic Lodge, essentially a secret fascist government of Italy that was discovered and exposed in 1981. But that not only that, but as we've been talking about in the last part of the broadcast, the fact that Stibom is intimately connected to a variety of United States intelligence operations, most notably the CIA, the Nugenhan Bank of Australia, and the Task Force 157 operations out there.
National Security Agency.
National Security Agency through Glauco Partel, the man who set up the sale of three atomic bombs to Syria. And, of course, the operations of Frank Turple and Ed Wilson, erstwhile quote-unquote ex-CIA agents in Libya who worked with Muammar Gaddafi and, according to Frank Turple, also trained Mehmet Ali Agha, the would-be assassin of Pope John Paul II.
Now, that really is the key aspect of our Stibom, is the fact that the one of the key three people in that organization, Bekir Çelenk, was reportedly the paymaster for the plot to shoot the Pope. And again, that with the massive connections between Western intelligence and the Stibom ring, with the massive connections between the P2 and Ambrosiano complex and the Stibom ring, calls seriously into question the so-called Bulgarian connection. We're basically going to blow that connection out of the water next week. Returning now to the series that Le Matin did about Stibom, we're going to take a look at some Stibom operations here, which go behind the Iron Curtain. Recall that there was a reference to Bulgaria and Yugoslavia as being transit countries. There were also some Stibom dealings behind the Iron Curtain. Returning once again to Le Matin, this one from June 22nd, 1984. And again, translation, Jonathan Marshall. Research credit to Ted Rubenstein. Speaking of some of the Turkish associates of Henry Arsène, DEA agent and head of Stibom, Le Matin and Fabrizio Calvi write as follows. One of the Turkish traffickers arrested was Tegmen Erdem, E-R-D-E-M, the first to explain to Palermo all the mechanisms of this contraband organization. In the past, Erdem had already furnished these same details to a DEA agent based in West Germany. The Turk claimed, moreover, to be himself an agent of the DEA and claimed that his agency number was SXY2000. Quote, I knew Arsene in 1982 in the United States, unquote, Erdem explained to the judge. We were in California in the company of Mehmet Kantas. We had a reunion where Arsene recalled the sale of hundreds of Leopard 2 tanks and Cobra helicopters. Arsene also told us that he negotiated the sale of 50 or so M48 tanks. They were in Hamburg, supposed to be sent to their destination through a Danish port. When Arsene realized this, he billed the cost of transport based on the value of the Spanish port, excuse me. When Arsene realized this, he billed the cost of transport based on the value of the boat charged with convoying the arms. He told us then that Renato Gamba furnished the arms. In July of 1982, Tegmen Erdem did his first deal with Arsene and discovered the Syrian ramifications of the arms traffic. Arsene also served as intermediary between the Polish government and that of South Yemen to sell 56 tons of arms, 5,000 Kalashnikovs and 5,000 Tokarevs. But why did the Polish government use Arsene? Why did Arsene supply the Polish government with false documents attesting that the arms were destined for the Emirate of Qatar? Erdem got the response from Arsene's mouth. Quote, they explained that they didn't want the Soviets to know about the operations so they wouldn't get a percentage. The Poles had a pressing liquidity problem. The deal brought them $1,800,000. Still, according to Tegmen Erdem, the first negotiations of which he was a part took place at the seat of the Polish ambassador in Vienna. Besides Arsene, the Polish delegation was composed of a functionary from the defense ministry named Andrzej Urbaniak, U-R-B-A-N-I-A-C. The sellers represented by Arsene. Tegmen Erdem and two Syrians associated with Arsene. Those two were named Abu Daoud, called George, and Mustafa Zenedine. Remember Abu Daoud, we're going to come back to him in a future broadcast some months down the line. For our purposes here, it should be noted not only that still another associate of Arsene, Tegmen Erdem, claims to be a DEA agent and even cited his number, but it's worth noting here that Arsene has dealings behind the so-called Iron Curtain, specifically in Poland, and the operations of Stibom behind the Iron Curtain would be of obvious interest and obviously could quite obviously be used as a vehicle by Western intelligence.
Okay, continuing, as Dave mentioned earlier, to the connections of these various agents and their connections specifically behind Iron Curtain countries, we're going to read from an article that was originally published in the San Jose Mercury of March 24th, 1983. The headline is NBC... says CIA agents under investigation. Dateline New York AP Wire story. The Reagan administration is investigating whether the CIA station chief in Rome and two of his agents disobeyed orders in connection with the investigation of the shooting of Pope John Paul II, NBC News reported Wednesday. The three, whom the network by law did not identify, raised the ire of officials in Washington because they refused to stop, quote, discrediting the so-called Bulgarian connection in the inquiry of the papal shooting, NBC said. Mehmet Ali Aja, a Turkish gunman serving a life sentence for the attempted assassination of the Pope on May 13, 1981, has told Italian investigators that several Bulgarians helped him plan the attack. Quoting an unidentified key administration source, NBC said the three may be fired because they have allegedly disobeyed orders issued by the National Security Advisor William Clark and CIA Director William Casey. NBC said the Rome agents may have downplayed the Bulgarian connection because they did not want attention drawn to, one, an alleged close working relationship, unquote, between them and an Italian labor leader who was arrested as a Bulgarian spy. Get back to that. Two, the possible use of a guns and drug smuggling route between Sofia, Bulgaria, and Milan, Italy, to run CIA agents into Eastern Europe. Okay, two very intriguing things there. The last two things mentioned that supposedly would be the reasons that these CIA agents would be downplaying the Bulgarian connection and that would be upsetting the Reagan administration. The first, the reference to an alleged close working relationship between the CIA and an Italian labor leader who was arrested as a Bulgarian spy. The man they're referring to here is a man by the name of Luigi Scricciolo, spelled S-C-R-I-C-C-I-O-L-O. Luigi Scricciolo we will be talking about at some length next week. Luigi Scricciolo is interestingly involved with Michael Ledeen, and through Michael Ledeen, possibly with Alexander Haig, is also involved with one of Mehmet Ali Aja's stories, like the Bulgarian Connection, but it was one of the first of Mehmet Ali Aja's stories to fall apart under scrutiny, and will perhaps lead us in considering how it fell apart and where, to looking a little more closely into where Mehmet Ali Aja's stories come from in the first place. The second part, and for more useful for our purposes right in this show, because we'll get to Scricciolo next week, the possible use of a gun and drug smuggling route, obviously the Stibom route, between Sofia, Bulgaria, and Milan, Italy. Well, the idea that it's being used to run CIA agents into Eastern Europe is quite interesting. There is quite possibly some involvement by some level of the Bulgarian government in this operation, if nothing else. Just as in the American government, there are undoubtedly elements of the Bulgarian government that are quite corrupt enough to set up little elements on money-making operations on their own and to utilize their positions to put away private nest eggs.
Also, a couple of things to consider also is the fact that Bulgaria fought on the side of the Axis in World War II, and it's not unreasonable to suppose there might be some residual fascist elements in Bulgaria. Beyond that, too, there's always the very, very murky consideration of counterintelligence, in other words, spy versus spy, something we generally try to stay away from when we can, but a number of researchers that we've spoken with share the view that we have, which is that both sides knew what was going on with Stibom and were using this arms for drugs ring to help monitor the other's activities. Now, one of the aspects to, one of the things to consider in connection with the obvious involvement of U.S. intelligence with Stibom is the possibility of using that organization in order to obtain East Bloc guns for whatever purpose. Just exactly that suggestion was made in an issue of the Reader's Digest, specifically in the issue of November 1983, in an article about Stibom, but blaming the whole thing on the KGB in Bulgaria, in an article about Stibom by a man named Nathan Adams. The title of the article is Drugs for Guns. It's all about Stibom and basically makes the whole thing out to be a commie plot, which, as we've seen, is a massive exaggeration in light of all the P2 in the P2 connections, the fact that it was headed up by a DEA agent and had all kinds of other U.S. intelligence connections. Interestingly enough, in this article, Drugs for Guns, Adams admits that the CIA was involved with the Stibom ring to a certain extent. He writes, "Incredibly enough, Western nations, perhaps unwittingly, have actually contributed to the conspiracy. For example, until recently, the CIA, via a German broker, was purchasing millions of dollars of Eastern Bloc weapons to equip anti-Sandinista guerrillas in Nicaragua. The weapons were supplied by Kintex." So according to Nathan Adams, Stibom was used to obtain AK-47s for the Contras in Nicaragua. And that may, in fact, be a pattern which is continuing to this day.
Indeed. And bear in mind, too, now, again, we don't have to examine every single one of these in a whole lot of detail, but it should be looked at this way. As Dave mentioned, one of the possible reasons for these connections between the CIA and their conduit into the Stibom operation would be, as Dave mentioned, a way to get Eastern European weaponry for whatever purposes they might desire. Now, one of the things that has been going on, for instance, on the Nicaraguan border, is that the Contras have been attempting, in some cases, or it has been alleged that they have attempted to make it look as though the Sandinistas were making raids into Honduran and Costa Rican territory. There have been times when the Sandinista government has admitted, yes, we made this attack on a Contra base. There have been other times when the Sandinistas have said, no, we did not do that. But what has been proffered as evidence on the behalf of the Contras to prove that the Sandinistas did it were bodies, corpses, which don't talk, and Eastern European Soviet bloc weapons. Now, if indeed AK-47s and the like are being shipped through the CIA from Stibom to send to the Contras in Nicaragua, it's very possible that they could be used for just this sort of provocation with exactly the same kind of motives as were being used by the Italian fascists during the Strategy of Tension days.
Exactly. And there are indications that this Bulgarian AK-47 connection may be continuous to this day in spite of the interdiction of the Stibom arms for drugs ring. In witness to that, we cite the following, this from the San Jose Mercury of September 1st, 1985. It's Dateline's headline, "Nicaraguan rebels get Polish rifles, U.S. says." Nicaraguan resistance forces recently received a shipment of 10,000 Polish-made AK-47 rifles as part of a weapons deal worth an estimated $6 million, U.S. officials say. According to one official, the shipment was sent from the Bulgarian port of Burgas, B-U-R-G-A-S, and reached the resistance forces via a Latin American country hostile to the leftist Sandinista government. The country was not identified. So the Polish and Bulgarian AK-47 connection may be continuous to this day. We've seen Steve Bomb transiting through Bulgaria and dealing with Poland in the past.
Radio Free. America.
All right, and we are now back live. And for those of you who just tuned in or are a little confused, since we have some better tape quality, that's a recent broadcast comparatively, May of 86. It may be a little confusing because the tape quality is good enough it's hard to tell sometimes if it's live or not. That, of course, as mentioned when we started this whole long tape segment, was tape from the Mediterranean Merry-Go-Round series that we did in May of 1986. This, of course, is Nip Tuck speaking with Dave Emery in the studios here at KFJC with Radio Free America, and we're just about into the, well, we are very definitely into the final segment of the broadcast tonight, and we're going to wrap it up. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about the segment that we just heard, and a little bit about Steve Bomb. And as those of you out there, you alert listeners, and I know that that you are just that, cannot have failed to notice the last couple of articles and the tightening up of the focus on, in fact, the Contra connection, or the apparent Contra connection, to the Steve Bomb operation.
Well, not only was the Steve Bomb operation used, at least according to an article in the Reader's Digest, which in turn is very close to the CIA, used to get Polish-made AK-47s to the Contras, but the Steve Bomb Arms for Drugs ring was also used, as indicated in a number of different articles, for getting arms to Khomeini's regime in Iran. Now that, of course, is very, very reminiscent of the Contragate-Iran-gate, which is currently exploding all over the American and world political scene. For those people who eventually hear this broadcast via tape, we're doing this on December 3rd of 1986. Contragate-Iran-gate is reaching a mounting crescendo. Two of the central aspects of that involve the U.S. basically selling arms to Khomeini's Iran, using the proceeds from those sales, at least in part, to finance the Contras in Nicaragua. Now, some of the central points with Steve Bomb, as we looked at in particular in the second of the Fabrizio Calvi articles, we looked at basically a number of different connections between Steve Bomb and U.S. intelligence, and according to Glauco Bartel, by his own admission, an agent for the National Security Agency, the Steve Bomb operation was largely an extension of the U.S. government itself. Basically, as he indicated, it was a back channel of the American Intelligence Services and State Department, used not only for trafficking arms, but for creating political influence in some of the countries those arms are moved to through the circulation of bribes. Some of the key connections here and similarities between Steve Bomb and the Contragate Iran gate that is breaking and that we're going to be covering on Sunday night in another archive show for about 3 hours on One Step Beyond. First of all, the link up between the U.S. National Security Establishment and Steve Bomb. It not only ties of CIA and NSA, but also the head of the Steve Bomb Arms for Drugs ring was himself an agent for the Drug Enforcement Administration, DEA's intersection with CIA, we're going to talk about in the third part of our program next month. Now, the connections to Iran, obviously, are very, very similar. The connections to Contras are very, very similar. And it's also worth noting, of course, that, again, this is a criminal enterprise in which the proceeds from drug traffic are used to finance the arms trade. It's also worth noting that Steve Bomb involves the manipulation of Swiss banks, too. Much of the financing done through Swiss banks, that is also the case with Contragate-Irangate. Note in particular the intersection between the aforementioned Nugenhand Bank and people associated with Steve Bomb. Eugene Bartholomaeus, Wilson Associate, Nugenhand Bank Associate, and obviously in light of the discussion of Nugenhand at the beginning of the broadcast, it's pretty easy to see some of the comparisons between Steve Bomb and Nugenhand. And again, we went into Steve Bomb this evening because, although it has not been established, there are indications that Steve Bomb and Irangate, Contragate may in fact be directly hooked up. It is, as we say, food for thought and grounds for further research. This Sunday, on One Step Beyond, from 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock, we're going to be dealing with Contragate, Irangate. The tapes of that show will be on permanent file at DAVCOR for people who eventually hear this broadcast via tape.
Now, one of the reasons that, we're stressing this so strongly and that we are bringing in these connections to old cases that we have talked about, although in many instances of these cases are still ongoing, certainly Steve Baum has never been fully documented and explored to the extent because it was apparently, if not the largest, certainly one of the largest arms and drug rings ever. But one of the reasons that we are spending the time to go back over these cases, even though it's in some instances we have not yet made these connections, is because, first of all, the connections that seem apparent to us or seem implicit are the same seemingly implicit connections or similar to the ones that were, in fact, in place with Irangate and Contragate, which we have been talking about for several years. Of course, we did not coin this term, but we were talking about these particular gun and arms routes and these illegal funding operations and have been doing so for a long time. In a similar way, the connections between Steve Baum and these things, while not proved yet, are very similar types of connections. In other words, they go beyond coincidence, and the only thing really remaining is to find a few nails that will finally nail the coffin lid down. Now, again, to reiterate, there's some very interesting connections and some cases that may have to be reopened. And, of course, this is probably one of the reasons that everybody at the White House is running around busily sticking knives into each other's back, because when this blows open, it's going to be very, very wide.
Of course, we looked at the fact that a major player in the Steve Baum operation was Rossano Brazzi, a good personal friend of Ronald Reagan's. Of course, Reagan is the name that everybody is wondering about in connection with Contragate, Irangate. How much did he know?
Indeed. Now, one of the things that Dave mentioned, of course, was the connections between the NSA and Steve Baum. One of the main connections, of course, was a man by the name of Glauco Partel, operated out of Los Angeles, a company apparently explicitly designed to illegally ship arms, by the name of Sutas. Glauco Partel was also a National Security Council operative. Glauco Partel was connected also to Bartholomeus and through Bartholomeus to Edwin Wilson.
A key name now with regard to Sutas, Mehmet Kantas, the fellow we looked at operating out of L.A., a major branch of Steve Baum, the reverse route as it was described in the Le Point article, coming out of Los Angeles.
That's right. So we have, again, within domestic American connections to this illegal arms trade that are not just the Wilson ones, but again, this Mehmet Kantas and Sutas connection, others. We have Ed Wilson, who is currently doing time in federal prison, a whole lot of time, for the same type of thing that other people now are who have been arrested for shipping arms to Iran are saying they were set up, they were working for George Bush. Ed Wilson maintained, and we have long agreed that he is probably correct, that he was also working for the CIA in his various operations, including the large-scale operations of taking weaponry and training materials and also training expertise to Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. Now, this is significant for a variety of reasons, but the most obvious one are the obvious parallels between the Iran case, in which, after years of protesting that how they would never do business with terrorists, and that, in fact, that they were combating terrorism worldwide, it's been now revealed the Reagan administration, in fact, did business with Iran and had secret back channels. Well, we have been maintaining for years that the Reagan administration has secret back channels to Libya and have been doing business with them. And Ed Wilson did that business while working very closely with CIA officers, and he is now in jail. So it is quite possible that one of the other things the Reagan administration is desperately trying to shelve up the defenses on is that if the Iran gate case blows open, then in fact we may have a Libya gate to go with it.
And as we've seen in some of our discussions on One Step Beyond, and as we're going to examine during the One Step Beyond show coming up on Sunday that will go into the permanent archives, the same players that we've seen in Iran gate and Contragate are largely the same team we saw it with Turple Wilson. Names like Thomas Kleins, Theodore Shackley, Richard Secord, a fellow named Albert Hakim, a new player on the Turple Wilson stage. These are the names that are cropping up with regard to both Irangate and Contragate. And, of course, as we've seen, both of those scandals turned out to be two different sides of the same unfortunate coin.
Now, one of the other major names that has cropped up in regard to the Contras repeatedly, and in fact has cropped up on our broadcast here many, many times, is that of Major General John Singlaub. John Singlaub has a right-wing pedigree as long as your arm, dating back to when he was in charge of the forces in Korea and was booted out by Jimmy Carter for basically making undemocratic comments about the president's right to command the troops in the field as commander-in-chief, rather similar to another right-winger of note, General MacArthur, who was booted out for saying the same types of things in Korea. John Singlaub, of course, also is extensively connected with
the World Anti-Communist League and the John Birch Society and Ronald Reagan's National Security Council. And we talked in this earlier broadcast how John Singlaub himself went directly to Ronald Reagan and got marching orders to set up this underground covert operation to get arms and things into the Contras in Nicaragua. And one of the ways this was done, of course, we now find out was the Iran Gate monies being brought over.